All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Office 365 Directory and Access Management with Windows Azure Active Directory. It's a mouthful. My name is John Aluck. I'm a program manager with the Windows Azure AD team. And for the next 75 minutes, we'll just walk through some of the scenarios which were alluded to this morning in the overview and get into some of the details around directory synchronization, provisioning objects in Windows Azure Active Directory, and then things like password synchronization and single sign-on. So with that, let's get started. So just to recap for folks, what is Windows Azure Active Directory? Well, for most people in the room, I'd assume, you've probably deployed Active Directory on-premises. You have Exchange, SharePoint, well, multiple instances of SharePoint, apparently. One of those should be Exchange. Link, and line of business applications that talk with your Active Directory. You've invested in that. You manage data, your users, your contacts, your groups. Well, what we've done is we've built Office 365 in the cloud based off of its own directory, Azure Active Directory. And so in terms of an analogous model, Azure Active Directory is the cloud directory for your online services and actually can be your online directory for all of your applications and scenarios. What we did was we rebuilt, or actually we've built an infrastructure based on Active Directory to operate at the scale required for Office 365, internet scale. And clearly, it wouldn't work for us to just go and stand up a different Active Directory instance every time a new customer signed up. So Azure Active Directory under the hood is actually what we call a multi-tenant directory service. It can hold, well, millions, literally, of customers' information in the service. We've built it so that you can extend the AD you already have in your on-premises network to this directory in the cloud. And we'll talk a lot about the different options you have for keeping your on-premises AD and Azure Active Directory in sync. And what this does is it gives effectively a cloud-based directory, a directory hosted and available on the internet. And the services like identity, you can sign in. You can use those services for organizations, especially if you don't have Active Directory on-premises already. You can start building your apps. You can start building your experiences directly in the cloud. What we've really done is, by providing this single directory, you can consolidate your management in one place. You don't have separate applications with their own identity stores and their own directories under the hood. You have a single directory in the cloud, just like you used to have in your on-premises environment. And another goal for us is, you should be able to access those services, access the directory, from any platform, from any device. In other words, every user should be able to use this directory. And ultimately, in turn, you can connect then with other people, other customers of the directory as well. I want to spend a couple minutes and talk about stuff that's new. New, in this case, is a relative term. It would be anywhere from the last 2 months to even 6 or 8 months ago. First of all, like we talked about in the overview session this morning, we've added support for non-ADFS STSs. A couple of the more prominent ones are Shibboleth, Ping, Optimal IDM. The goal there is you've already invested in deploying SHIB or any of your other STSs on-premises. You shouldn't have to go and deploy ADFS as well just to work with Office 365. Now, there's an important thing to note. There are some gaps here between what you can enable, what scenarios you can enable with ADFS, and what you can enable with Shibboleth. All those sort of caveats are documented in TechNet. There's a link later on that you can refer to the documentation that calls out which clients, for example, will work with which of these non-ADFS STSs. All that information is available for you. We've also recently shipped what we call Windows Azure Active Authentication. We talked about that this morning as well. And that's basically 2FA in the cloud for your users. You don't need to deploy anything in your on-premises environment to require administrators, and soon users, to provide a second factor of authentication to log into Office 365 and Windows Azure Active Directory. Later on in the session, we'll dig into that a little bit more in terms of how that works. Earlier this calendar year, we introduced what we call the Directory Graph API. This is a REST-based API that allows you to get access to your directory data. Using that API, just like you used to use LDAP in your on-prem environment, you can access the users, contacts, groups, all that information that's available for Office 365. You can create, update, delete, whatever you need to do there. And the nice thing about this API is it lets you build your custom business applications. I like to always use the example of an expense workflow. You have to approve expense reports and such. Well, you can now build these applications in the cloud, host them in Azure, and leverage the Azure Active Directory as your backend through the Graph API to figure out things like, well, who is this person's manager so we can send mail to them? Or what is their cost center? What is their department? All that information that you used to have with Active Directory on-premises is now available in the cloud through the REST API. And finally, we also support what we call multi-tenant applications. And you probably heard me say this morning if you were here. You can now build an application and host it for multiple other customers or companies to use. You could build the expense workflow application and in turn sell that to someone else so they could use it for their company. And that's what we call multi-tenant. The single instance of this application or service can operate against multiple different companies in Office 365 or Azure Active Directory. Again, I mentioned this earlier, this morning, I suppose. We are now going to release a public beta of the Azure Active Directory connector for FIM 2010 R2. A couple questions this morning came up, so I want to call these out. It does require R2 because of the way we've built the connector. It's dependent on the new ECMA2 framework and a lot of the performance benefits we get in there. Why do we have this connector? Why are we releasing it? This is really our solution for multi-forest customers. Again, multiple 80 forests on-premises. The Dersin compliance, as it's built today, only supports synchronization from a single forest on-premises and synchronizes that up to the cloud. If you have multiple forests or even non-Active Directory services on-premises, you can use FIM and its library of connectors to synchronize that information from whatever you have on-premises and then use the Azure Active Directory to export that into our cloud. The public beta starts early in July, and that's going to be available just via the regular MS Connect site, so connect.microsoft.com. You'll be able to find that there. It's an open public beta, and we'd love to get your feedback on that. Recently, we've added support for Windows Server 2012 and SQL Server 2012 for DirSync. So you can now install DirSync on Windows Server 2012. You can now synchronize data from Windows Server 2012. And should you need to, you can deploy DirSync against a standalone SQL Server, a version SQL Server 2012. What we've done as well is we've updated our DirSync appliance. So if you go to the site today and download, in fact, if you've downloaded it since June 3rd, you'll find that under the hood, we deploy SQL Server 2012 Express Service Pack 1. So that's something new as well. And finally, one of the big things we've announced just in the past month is password synchronization for DirSync. What this does is gives you what I like to call simple sign-on, and we'll get into the details in about 2 seconds. But effectively, it allows users to have the same username and password on-premises as well as in the cloud. So, meet Password Sync. It's a feature of DirSync. If you've downloaded DirSync in the last month, you may have seen there's an additional screen there in the configuration wizard that literally has a checkbox and says, enable password synchronization. That's all you have to do. There's no additional software to install. There's no reboots of your domain controllers. It's just a feature of DirSync. When you check that magic box, we take the work on to deploy the components necessary to synchronize those passwords from your on-prem environment. If you have not elected to enable password sync, none of that happens. No additional security, nothing's applied at all. The key thing here is because it's a feature of the DirSync tool, it's only available for single forests right now. Actually, over the past week and in previous weeks, we've been getting some asks for support for multi-forest password synchronization as we've built it for the single forest scenario. So I've taken that feedback, and we'll see what we can do on that front. Now, this is the part I really want to make sure I get really clear on. We synchronize hashes of password hashes to AD. We do not, and we never see, your user's plain text passwords. The main difference here is, for folks in the room that are using an existing password sync solution, you probably had to deploy some software in domain controllers, right? A lot of the existing solutions are based off of the PCNS solution. You had to install a password filter DLL on all your domain controllers, and that would intercept password changes as they were happening. Well, that meant that your code running the domain controllers actually at some point in time at least sees that plain text password before processing happens. If your domain controller is compromised, if that code in any way is not doing what it should and malicious, there's a possibility that plain text password could be stored used somewhere else. The way we've built our password sync, like I said, we never see your plain text password. When you check that box, enable password sync, we configure DirSync to act like a domain controller. It will call into Active Directory every 2 minutes, like we see at the bottom there, and effectively say, hey, Active Directory, which users have changed their passwords. When we get back that set of users, the password that we get is represented as a password hash. So it's already hashed once. It's an MD4 hash. Now, before anyone puts their hand up, yes, we know MD4 are not the safest. There's issues there. So we, in turn, rehash the MD4 hash with a SHA-2 algorithm. And that value is what's then pushed up into the cloud. So before the password hash even hits the wire, it's already been rehashed numerous times. And that same value is what's stored in the Azure Active Directory authentication service. So when a user signs in the username and password, what we're actually doing is validating that password against the hash. And so there's magic sauce in the cloud to help us do that. But suffice it to say, we never see your plain text passwords, they're never passed over the wire, and nor are they ever stored. Another thing here is we don't actually require you to enable reversible password encryption. I know that's an option in Active Directory, and some of the password sync solutions that are already out there say, please do this. That's not a requirement at all. You can continue to use your AD exactly as is, and we'll work with the hashes. As the last bullet point calls out here, we check for password updates every 2 minutes. So every 2 minutes, we'll call into AD and say, who's changed their password? Who's changed their password? And we'll push those up to the cloud. The regular dir sync still runs every 3 hours. So you can imagine sometimes you might get into a situation where a new user object is created. Dir sync won't create that user for 3 hours. So we intelligently have retry. If we, for some reason, cannot synchronize the password to the cloud, we'll put it in a retry queue and keep trying for up to one full day. So for all intents and purposes, the majority of the time, a user password should be up there within 5 minutes. And we will continue to retry if there's exceptions or any known issues for up to a day. The nice thing about password sync is, from a security perspective, we defer to your on-prem password policies. You've obviously put a lot of time into deciding what are the right policies, complexity requirements, history requirements, and all that. By virtue of the way we've built password sync, we really don't care what your policies are. We say, your policies are applied by GPO when the password is set. We're just going to take whatever was approved, whatever was stored in AD, the hash of that, hash it again, push it to the cloud. So, like I said earlier today, it's a double-edged sword. It's now on you to make sure you don't have a silly policy like require one character. Because if the letter A is the password on premises and that password syncs to the cloud, we're now going to allow that as your password for the cloud as well. So it kind of goes both ways. One of the ways that we've built password sync is we wanted to make sure that users could still access their stuff in the cloud if they haven't been on-prem in a while. So put another way, password syncing users will never expire in the cloud. So let's say Bob was at work on January 1st, and then he's gone on vacation for 2 months. He took a sabbatical. His password might expire February 1st. And if he were to sign in on premises again, you get that dialogue after you sign in that says, your password's expired. Please change your password. Right? That's your normal flow in Active Directory. Well, if Bob were still off on his sabbatical, and he's sitting in Hawaii, clearly a very important sabbatical, and he tries to access his OAuth or his Link Online or any Office 365 or Azure AD service, he'll get to use that old password. It won't prompt him. It won't say it's expired on premises. It'll let him right through. The idea there was we should make it as easy as possible for a user to sign in, keep the sign-in simple. And so the next time around when Bob gets on premises, he types in that old password, then it's going to pop up and say, please change your password. That change goes into AD. We'll sync it up. So something I wanted to make sure was clear here. I did get a couple questions, so I added one bullet point right before this presentation. Well, can I still override passwords in the cloud? Yes. In that example earlier, when Bob was sitting in Hawaii on February 3rd, say he forgot his on-premises password. The administrator can use PowerShell, use the set MSOL user commandlet, to update Bob's password in the cloud. So it is possible to update that password, and for an administrator to update that password in the cloud. As you can see, we actually will hide the change password link in the portal, in SharePoint Online, in OAuth, and prevent the user from getting out of sync by accident. So that's something we've done there based on some feedback from customers to try to make it as simple as possible to manage your passwords. One thing to note, you can't currently control which users' passwords sync. So what that means is, if you're familiar with dir sync, you can configure filtering. I can say, exclude these users from synchronizing. Password sync respects that same filter criteria. So in other words, if I have 10 users that are not synchronizing via dir sync, we will also not synchronize their passwords. Unfortunately, you can't further filter which passwords will synchronize. Any dir sync user that is syncing will have their passwords synced. And another behavior that's come up a couple times, so I wanted to clarify this, is if a user's account has user must change password at next logon, which is one of the checkboxes there if you reset a password via users and groups, if that's checked, we won't sync that password hash to the cloud because we know that user is going to go and change their password again. So when that option is selected, the hash will not sync to the cloud. And another scenario we've actually been getting a lot of questions on is, okay, well, I have single sign-on. Can you hold on one sec? I have single sign-on configured today. I think password sync is right for me. How do I switch over? The wiki article here, and this is obviously available to you after this presentation, walks you through the different ways you can switch from single sign-on over to password sync. Some customers want to trial it first, see what's going on. So one of the scenarios is convert some set of users first, have them try it out, and switch everyone. And the other one is I'm ready to go, switch everyone over. So both of those are accounted for in the wiki, and that's the link right there. It is a live document, so if there are questions, feel free to post questions at the bottom, and we'll try to make sure that guidance keeps up to date and the most relevant for you. There's one question, and we'll keep going. Okay, the question was about account lockout and whether we synchronize that. That's a great question. So password synchronization does not currently synchronize account lockout, account disabled state. It only synchronizes the password. DirSync, the every 3 hour synchronization, synchronizes if a user account is disabled. So in the user account control attribute in AD, there can be multiple states, one of which is account disabled. We'll synchronize that. But that's the regular DirSync. Password sync does not introduce the lockout state where I tried X times, right, and now I've been locked out. That's actually something I've been asked a couple times this week. Again, feedback I'm going to take back to our team and see what we can do to improve that for sure. But as it is right now, we do not synchronize account lockout. Okay, when do I use password sync? When should I use ADFS? So let me be very clear at the beginning here. ADFS offers a lot of features that password sync doesn't. And so depending on what you need, then you should make a decision about whether to go ADFS single sign-on or if password sync is good enough. And so we put the table together to help folks understand sort of what the trade-offs are. First thing is use the same password to access resources. Well, with password sync, we're synchronizing your password, so it's the same password in both places. With ADFS or single sign-on, you're signing in against your on-premises AD, so clearly that password's one and the same. With password sync and ADFS, you get to control password policies from on-premises. We just talked about that, right? Complexity, history, all those policies are defined on-premises. We do have support for two-factor authentication in the cloud. That's actually, I think, in a couple slides here. That's the Windows Azure Active Authentication feature. But we don't support custom 2FA solutions or MFA. So that's why you see a check mark, but there's an asterisk there. With ADFS, you can plug in custom 2FA providers via an HTTP module. You can require VPN. There's a bunch of sort of different ways you can implement 2FA that we just can't do with password sync. So depending on what you want and what's good enough, you may get 2FA strictly with the cloud identity. Password sync isn't true single sign-on. And by single sign-on, we mean if you signed in on-premises already, you don't have to sign in again to the cloud. ADFS is true single sign-on. If you're on-premises and you've already logged in, you won't be prompted for your credentials again, except in the Outlook client. We know that, and we're working on that piece. One of the features ADFS and other single sign-on providers will provide is what we call client access filtering. These are decisions about whether to grant authorization to a user based on where they are. And where they are, in this case, is an IP. It's an IP address. And I'll dig into that in a couple slides here. And just for clarity, the last row is authentication occurs in your on-prem AD. So with ADFS, you are actually signing in against your on-premises Active Directory. With password sync, you're still signing in against the cloud. It's just that password string is the same. So stepping back a little bit, there's a bunch of different ways you can integrate your on-prem AD with the cloud. Password sync is around authentication. You know, how do my users provide their username and password? What value do they provide? But there's also the task of getting things into Azure Active Directory in Office 365. And so there's a lot of different solutions we've provided. And depending on what your requirements are, one of those solutions is hopefully good for you. So laying this out a little bit, we've come across basically 6 or 7 different questions that customers are asking when they're trying to evaluate these options. The first one is, so we call it target customer segment. So how big of a customer is this? What can I do? What does that option give you? Where do I make my changes? If I want to update John O's display name, where do I actually go and make that change? Do I need additional hardware? Where do my users sign in? User login experience. So login experience in this case is, do I get prompted multiple times? Do I not get prompted multiple times? And finally, the complexity, where complexity can be the amount of work to get something set up or the actual complexity of the topology itself. And you'll see this in a second. The five high-level options that we really try to lay out are as follows. The portal. And I'll actually fill in this table here with the information. The portal, then a PowerShell or graph. Then we move up into the DirSync space. DirSync can either use no special identity solutions, so what we call cloud identities. You can run DirSync with password sync enabled. And finally, you can run DirSync with single sign-on, ADFS being Microsoft's single sign-on solution. So as you move from left to right, what you're going to see is the complexity may increase, but the amount of the scenarios we can support are also increased. So for example, with the portal, you can't really do a lot. You can't really set a lot of information on your users. You can set their display name, their department, their user principal name, but you can't control exchange attributes. You can't define that this is supposed to be a conference room versus a user mailbox. So you're very limited in what the portals can do. But you know what? You don't have to any additional hardware. You just use your web browser. And then from a login experience, there's no single sign-on, there's no password sync even. This is straight up just two different usernames, two different passwords. You can try your best to keep them in sync, but there's no programmatic guarantee that's going to happen. But at the same time, it's really easy. It's very low in complexity. So that's definitely a possibility for some scenarios. Have folks in this room attended the Fast Track session earlier this week? Did anyone go to that? Okay, so what we're really trying to do is help folks understand and evaluate, you know, what is the right solution for you as you step up along these scenarios you want to enable. And so you'll see a lot of overlap between this table and what the Fast Track and the Office 365 setup experience is going to start prescribing. So moving from portal to the PowerShell and graph, this is kind of your next step up. This gives you a little more access to the directory. You can set a little more information about users, contacts, and groups. These objects are still wholly in the cloud, though, so you have to use our PowerShell for the cloud. You have to use the graph, the REST API, in order to access those objects. Again, there's no real hardware required. You're not setting up DirSync. There's no single sign-on. And from a sign-in perspective, it's still against the cloud and two completely separate usernames and passwords. Where we start moving into more automated solutions are the last three columns. DirSync applies to all of them, so I'll kind of make a blanket statement. DirSync gives you the most control over information in the directory. We synchronize 142 attributes, I think, as of last count, from on-premises to cloud. A lot of them are exchange-specific, link, things that enable rich scenarios in Office 365. DirSync is the only way to light up those scenarios. DirSync is the only way, as well, to enable exchange hybrid deployments. So if you want to be doing staged migrations, if you want to light up some of these cross-premises litigation hold and voicemail settings of UM integration, you have to be running DirSync in the hybrid deployment mode to do that. You cannot use graph or portals to achieve that right now. But with DirSync, you have to have a machine for DirSync. You have to have a Windows Server OS. I'll talk in a minute about deploying that in Azure, but let's just say there needs to be a machine somewhere running DirSync. And then depending on the identity solution you have, you're going to get different levels of improved user sign-in experience. Cloud identities, like I said before, completely disjoint. You're going to have different usernames and passwords. Password sync lets you have the same username and password in both places, but you may be prompted multiple times. And then single sign-on, SSO, gives you true single sign-on. If you've already logged in, you don't have to log in again with the everlasting star right now for the Outlook client, which uses basic auth. So as you can see, as you move from the left to the right of this diagram, you get a lot more functionality. But at the farthest right column, you see under complexity, the last row, the complexity is actually relatively high. And we've said high because you have to set up single sign-on. You need to set up your, if you're using ADFS, your ADFS proxies, your network load balancers. So you have a multi-machine deployment here to maintain. And that's why we put password sync out there. If the first couple rows in the previous two slides are good enough, the same password everywhere, I can use my on-premises password policies, then maybe the second last column, DirSync with password sync, is good enough for you. And the goal here is to give you as much as we can with DirSync plus password sync, and then that way you can evaluate if SSO with ADFS is the right solution for you or not. And again, we have the wiki out there on how to move from SSO back to password sync if that's something you're looking to do. Some of the questions we often get are, okay, sync and single sign-on. How do these interact? What are the requirements or interdependencies? First of all, you don't have to use single sign-on just because you're synchronizing. As you saw a scene in there, you can run dir sync with password sync or just straight up dir sync without ever setting up single sign-on. But if you want single sign-on, we strongly recommend you use dir sync. I put this in there because I always get asked the question, you can actually use PowerShell to create user objects that could use single sign-on. And if folks in your room are doing that, you know this is the immutable ID attribute in there, and you can set that. The thing is, dir sync just does it for you, and it does it right. It's guaranteed to be the correct value. Because of the way we generate the immutable ID in Source Anchor with dir sync, it's actually very error-prone. And so that's why we say, if you're going to do single sign-on, you really should sync. Now, that said, if you're going to do single sign-on, you can use any synchronization solution, and the next slide lays out a couple different ones. So you could be a single forest customer. You could be a multi-forest customer, and then single sign-on just needs you to be running synchronization as we prescribe. And another question often is, well, what can I control what synchronizes? You can control which objects synchronize. You can't control which parts of objects synchronize. So I can say, I want my HR department to sync to the cloud, but not my legal. You can't say, I want phone numbers to synchronize, but not managers. That's something we don't support today, and I'm working on that right now to try to get that guidance in place, because I know that from previous sessions and conversation with folks, that that's something that some businesses require, whether it be privacy or government regulations. So some of the common topologies that we see with customers are listed in this table. Again, the simplest is a relative word, is the single AD forest and a single tenant in the cloud. That's obviously supported. That's dir sync. And if you want a single sign-on solution, that's ADFS or one of the supported non-ADFS STSs or third-party STSs. We also support multiple AD forests on-premises to a single tenant. You can imagine after a merger or acquisition scenario, you've got one forest in one office and one forest in another. Our solution for that is the FIM 2010 R2 plus Azure Active Directory connector. What we're doing there again is we're giving you the bits to push information up into Azure AD or Office 365. And it's an exercise for you as the admin to understand, well, what's the right business logic for aggregating that? Our ask to you is to consolidate that in FIM so that it looks like one collection. We don't know what business reasons drove you to have multiple forests. So that's why we're saying, you know best, please go do that. Make it look like this in FIM, and we'll push it up into the cloud for you. And again, ADFS or third-party STS can be used here for a single sign-on. We also support a single AD forest on-premises up into multiple tenancies. Very common examples are a school has multiple campuses. I have one AD forest, but five different campuses represented within. And I want that to be five different tenancies in Office 365. Or by department, right? I have a legal and HR department. I want them to be separate for whatever guidance or policy reasons. We do support that. You can do that either with, again, the FIM plus the Azure Active Directory connector, because, again, you control all the logic of what flows where. Or you can actually set up multiple instances of the dir sync appliance. I think I have a picture of this in the next slide or two here of how that actually happens. How many folks in the room have non-Active Directory services on-premises? It's my favorite group. No, I'm just kidding. We do support all types of non-Active Directory services. Again, you're going to use FIM here plus the Azure AD connector. Because FIM offers a variety of connectors for talking with on-premises directories, that's our solution. You can have whatever there from SQL to iPlanet, LDAP directories. That's all connectivity that we can support. And again, you connect to the cloud via the Azure Active Directory connector. In this case, ADFS only works with AD, so the single sign-on solutions are any of our supported third-party STSs. And finally, if the four rows above are true, the last one must be true as well. We can support multiple AD forests and multiple non-AD services on-premises, and that's sort of the default catch-all. In talking about the multi-tenant scenario, I want to just make sure something was super clear. The way that single sign-on is set up, should you want single sign-on, you can each namespace, so if I am Bob at Contoso.com, Contoso.com is namespace. Each namespace can only be associated with a single ADFS instance. If Think about this from the cloud. What you're going to do is you're going to tell Azure AD, this namespace, contosa.com, should be served by this ADFS instance. We have no way to know if you had multiple endpoints which one to send it to. So each namespace must map to one ADFS instance. The reverse is kind of not true. An ADFS instance can support multiple namespaces. So again, going to the example where I have an HR department and a legal department in the same forest on premises, and they're two different tenants, you can imagine having a single ADFS farm in on-prem, but having two different tenants with HR in one and legal in the other, and mapping those back to that ADFS farm. There's also a scenario that we've kind of helped customers get into where they have multiple AD forests. Can I just see a show of hands? How many folks here have two forests on premises because you've deployed an Exchange Resource Forest and an Account Forest? Okay, so I've got some good news for you. If you're in that pattern, you don't need FIM plus the connector. You can actually get away with DirSync. And this is how. So on the top, you have the resource forest containing Exchange, all your Exchange information. You've got your account forest down below, where your users are signing in every day. What you can actually do here is synchronize information like the UPN, immutable ID, other information that we need for sign-in, up into the resource forest, and then set up DirSync against that resource forest, because to DirSync, I see all the information I need in your resource forest, that's good enough for me. So making the resource forest look like it has all the information allows you to use DirSync and not need the FIM connector. Now, over time, you're going to migrate to the cloud, and eventually all your email's gone. Your mailboxes are fully in Exchange Online. You're ready to collapse that resource forest. So there's one big push. Push all of your Exchange data into your account forest. So you'll need to extend the schema and push all that info down, and then go ahead and collapse the resource forest. You're done with Exchange. Now what you can do is run DirSync from that account forest. So what you've really done is you've tricked DirSync to think earlier the resource forest has everything, and now the account forest has everything. We got this question a lot because DirSync is an appliance that just runs by itself. The setup's relatively easy and it just goes, whereas the FIM connector does require a little more expertise. So if you're in the camp where you've got an Exchange resource forest and the account login forest, then this could work for you. And you'll notice if you want ADFS, if you want single sign-on, you just need to connect that to your account forest, because that is your login forest, has the passwords, has all the account information. That doesn't need to change over the course of this migration. So coming back to this again, you can support a single forest synchronizing to multiple tenancies. You can do this via the DirSync appliance, where one DirSync services one tenant. So if I have one on-prem forest into five tenants in the cloud, you need to set up five different DirSyncs. Or you can do this with the Azure AD connector. So you have one instance of FIM with five instances of the connector, and that pushes out. You know, there's a trade-off in complexity. The five different DirSyncs, that's five machines you need, but you don't have to mess around with FIM. If you go with a FIM route, it's one machine, but you now have the complexity of managing which object goes where. And I'm just going to jump down to the caveat. In that world, where you have a single forest with multiple tenancies, every object can only exist in one of those tenants in the cloud. Now, I got this question earlier. Yes, you can technically synchronize an object to multiple tenancies, but the object won't work properly. If you think about this, if I Bob at Contoso, and he's in five different tenancies, only one of those tenancies will actually have the right-looking Bob object, all his emails, his UPN. In the other tenancies, it'll be mangled. It'll be missing email addresses because of the way we do domain verification. So that's why I just try to simplify it and say one object should only ever exist in one tenant. And in this case, again, you could have ADFS there, set up at the bottom, talking to that 180 forest. One ADFS farm can serve multiple tenancies, multiple namespaces. Integration requirements for ADFS, if you want ADFS 2.0, you need server 2008 OS or higher. ADFS is a role in server 2012. So if you have server 2012, you're good. For DirSync, for the host OS, we support Windows Server 2008 R2 and higher. SQL Server 2008 R2 and higher. By default, we use SQL Server 2012 Service Pack 1 Express. And we can synchronize data from Windows Server 2003 and above. And that's the same for passwords. And we actually support virtualization, which is the next slide. So you can deploy DirSync and ADFS in Azure, on Azure VMs. Vijay talked about that this morning. It's called the Connect program, I believe, right? And so we have a white paper available. We worked with Office 365 on this. What this does is it changes your hardware requirements. You no longer have to deploy the hardware on premises, but your hardware is now technically in the cloud, right? It's a virtual machine in Azure instead of a physical box or a VM on premises. So it doesn't really remove the management requirements or the high availability requirements that you would have had before. It changes the name of the game, our hardware or yours. Key thing here is it must have what we like to call line of sight. In other words, you have to have a virtual network back on premises because those components still function the same. It's just that it's the Azure hardware, so to speak, that's running the component, not your own. If you want to give your users extranet access via ADFS, you still have to deploy ADFS proxies. Again, this changes what requirements there are for hardware, not the way in which the software works. If you deployed ADFS on-prem and you wanted users to be able to log in from home, you'd have to deploy that ADFS proxy in your extranet. Still, the same stands true here, except the extranet part's a little bit easier because all Azure VMs are accessible from the internet. And finally, if you're deploying single sign-on ADFS in the cloud, you'll want to deploy a domain controller right beside it. Because of the latency, potential latency between your on-prem and Azure and the replication in AD, it's best to put the domain controller right beside your ADFS so it can have a local replica to talk to. It may be a little bit stale because of the replication latencies, but at least it's able to communicate right there, as opposed to having its request sent out and not coming back for some timeout period. A couple of core sync concepts that come up in all the new scenarios we often light up. Source anchor. So this came up this morning, I think. It was, how do you connect objects from on-premises to the cloud? Well, when we synchronize an object, we stamp that object with the source anchor value. It's like a foreign key in SQL, where we have your user object, your group, your contact on-premises, and we have a representation in the cloud. The source anchor is that link. And so when we run DirSync in the future and we update someone's department, we can know, this object in the cloud is this on-premises object, so push that change up there. The key thing about source anchor, obviously, then, is it needs to remain constant. It needs to be immutable for the lifetime of that object, because if it changes, then we're not going to find that object in the cloud, and now we're going to try and create a new one, and there's going to be overlap and all kinds of badness. So the source anchor needs to be immutable. The specific one that came up this morning is, if I've already created Bob in the cloud, how do I make sure that Bob on-prem matches up once I first turn DirSync on? Well, I alluded to this concept called softmatch. What we do is we say email addresses are pretty important. If someone has a primary email address, it probably is right. And so we use that to try and match objects coming from on-premises to the cloud. So if you've piloted Office 365, you've created your IT department in the cloud, 15 users, and they've used Exchange Online, they like it, you're ready to go to the next step and deploy DirSync. That's when this kicks in. You'll run DirSync, DirSync will see Jane, and then say, does Jane already exist in the cloud? Well, we realize this object in the cloud also has the same email address as Jane does, so it's probably the same thing, and then we link. And so that's how you transition from a cloud-only experience into something that's synchronizing from on-premises. And again, we match based on the primary SMTP address of the user object. There's some fallback logic out there. I'm just going to keep it real simple. Primary SMTP match is the way we go. We synchronize all objects by default, with a couple exceptions. Some of the default groups, like domain admins or domain users, those don't get synchronized. And we also don't synchronize default accounts, like the administrator account. We don't synchronize certain system objects. Certain things that AD needs are not interesting in the cloud, so we filter those out by default. As I said before, you can configure filtering in DirSync to filter out additional objects, and there's a TechNet article about how to do that. Options that can't be changed. You can't scope which attributes sync. Again, I don't get to say don't synchronize phone number or don't synchronize address. All those go by default. And right now, the sync interval is every 3 hours. So DirSync will synchronize all changes. Then it'll sleep 3 hours, wake up, do it again. You can't change that. The quick question, yep. Yeah, so the question was, is this something new in DirSync? Because in previous BPOS days, you could do that via config file, right? And so unfortunately, I inherited that. It's a test hook. It's not actually a feature of DirSync. It's not something that we really wanted to have out there for customers. The ability to specify in seconds, I think, the frequency, right? That's what you're referring to in the config file. That can be used, but it's primarily for test purposes. So the thing here that we're trying to do is we are trying to bring that window down. We're looking to decrease the time between sync cycles with DirSync. So The feature works that way. It's just we really don't want customers to use it because we are watching aggregate traffic across all of our customers. So we're doing that analysis to see whether we can provide that flexibility formally in a much better supported way than opening a config file and changing an integer value. And the last thing is DirSync can be deactivated. Something I've always said in the past is DirSync is a long-term investment. Set it up, leave it, forget about it. It'll tell you when something's wrong. There are certain cases when DirSync can be deactivated, but it does take time. And so you do that through the portal, and it tells you, you know, we are now deactivating DirSync, and roughly how long that'll take. Finally, something that's been a source of a little bit of confusion with customers is what we call the soft delete feature, or recycle bin. What we do with DirSync is we synchronize things from on-prem to the cloud. If you create a user, we'll sync the user. If you delete the user, we'll go and delete the user from the cloud as well. But when we delete that user in the cloud, they're put into the recycle bin. That's a general cloud concept for us. We want to make it as easy as possible for you to restore that user, should that have been an accident. So when we see the delete, we synchronize the delete across. The user object in the cloud is put in the cloud recycle bin. If you don't do anything more, it'll automatically purge within 30 days, just like you'd expect Windows recycle bin to work. However, if you need to recover that user, oops, that was a mistake, then you restore that user on premises. There's multiple ways to do that. You know, R2 has the recycle bin feature. There's authoritative restore for older versions of the OS. But if you restore that object, and that object has the same object GUID value, which a restore will do, then we'll automatically revive that user for you in the cloud. So if you had a user, had a mailbox, everything was good, for some reason someone accidentally deleted them, what'll happen is they'll move into the recycle bin. Their mailbox will look like it's gone, but it's in the recycle bin. When you restore that user, you undo that delete, everything automatically comes back up, user's mailbox is there, you're not starting from scratch. Multi-factor authentication options. So we have a couple ways to support this. The first one is with what we just recently announced, and actually there's a couple demos earlier today and this week, of Windows Azure Active Authentication. As it stands right now, the Windows Azure Active Auth is for cloud accounts only. It's part of Windows Azure. And right now, it's for admins only, although users, I think, support for users was just released, so you should be able to see that in short order as well. So that's the cloud-hosted version of multi-factor authentication. If you have ADFS, you could have a couple other options as well. One of them supports web-only or passive profiles, and the other one is based off of VPNs, and we'll talk about those in a moment. But first, Azure Active Authentication. So why do you want multi-factor authentication? Your data is valuable. Everyone's data is valuable. And it's true that passwords can be compromised. The password hash, the hash of the password hash count, I promise you that's hard to crack. And we have safeguards in place that if we realize something's going wonky, we can immediately rehash those and protect everything. But in general, passwords can be compromised. And the consumerization of IT, so people bringing their devices, I have an iPhone, I have an Android, that's only increasing the surface area for attack. And so what we wanted to do was provide a simple way for you to secure your tenancy. So that's why we can enable it for administrators, as well as users. High-value users could have that option enabled as well. We acquired a company called PhoneFactor a little bit ago. They provide that technology that we use for the Azure Active Authentication. It's already being used by thousands of customers across the globe. In fact, is anyone here using PhoneFactor? Great, so there are some folks already using PhoneFactor. This is that same technology. This is that same company. And we're already authenticating millions of logins a month. And as you probably already heard, the authentication with active authentication with Windows Azure AD can be done in a couple different ways. You can have a mobile application installed on your mobile device and get a one-time push, an out-of-band push of a message to you when you're prompted for your second factor authentication. Alternatively, there's an app that generates a code for you on a regular basis, much like you sort of see those RSA dongles, same idea. And so those, we call them one-time passcodes. And when you're logging in, and if 2FA is required, you'll be prompted for that code. You look at your phone, you grab that code, you put it into the UI, you're in. Another way is via phone call. So when you attempt to log in, if you need to provide that second factor of authentication, you can get a phone call, and then when prompted, I think you press pound, I can't remember exactly, but there is an interactive experience there, and that then circles back to our authentication platform, and you're in. And the last is text messages. So you can either receive an out-of-band text asking you to verify that you are, in fact, this user, or again, you can get a passcode which you enter into our login UI. All of these are supported as of right now for our two-factor authentication. Now, moving to single sign-on. Single sign-on, really, you can look at this in two ways. There's what do I get as the administrator, and then what does the user get as a user? So for the administrator, the nice thing is it's a single credential to manage, and this actually is a single credential. It's the AD credential. And again, I get a single place to manage policies. Now, I'm going to put a plug-in for Password Sync. Like I said before, password policies apply in the Password Sync case. But single sign-on gives you the truest, the most complete set of controls for on-premises workstation restrictions. All those other options AD gives you, you have to use ADFS and single sign-on to light those features up. And as I mentioned, in this case, your IDP, your identity provider, is your on-prem Active Directory. ADFS is how users log into AD and ultimately Office 365. From a user perspective, I have one credential. I have my username, I have my password. That's true of Password Sync as well, but the differentiation is the second bullet point. If I'm already logged into my corporate network, I don't have to log in again. So that's one of the big trade-offs to look at, right? If a user gets prompted multiple times but has to just enter the same password, is that good enough? Or do you need true, seamless, single sign-on for a variety of your scenarios and applications? Yes? With password synchronization, that was the question. So the way that that will work is, the question was if I use Outlook and then SharePoint and OWA or various other Office 365 apps, what's my experience? What will happen is you'll get prompted that first time when you hit an Office 365 resource. In the login UI, there's an option to keep me signed in. If you check that, it will allow you to access the next resource without re-prompting. So it's very, password sync doesn't change the experience from what you have today where you have two different passwords. Like you enter the first time, you can check the checkbox, and you don't get prompted for login again. In this case, password sync just means you get to enter the same password on premises and in the cloud. So from an experience perspective, it's no different. Just sort of laying out the various experiences for rich applications, so things like Link Online, the Link client, based off of what we call the sign-in assistant. Then there's web clients, things like the Office 2010 client, SharePoint Online, as well as OWA, the Outlook web application. And then full Exchange clients, things like ActiveSync, your Outlook client, and Entourage. We have three different types of identities, and these kind of moving down the line are more and more complex, but at the same time, they provide a richer experience. MS Online IDs, also called organizational IDs, are sort of the, I have a username and password on premises, and I have a username and password in the cloud. There's no correlation at all. So in each of these cases, if you're using Link, you'll be prompted for your username and password. So you enter the credentials for the cloud. With web clients, if I'm going to hit SharePoint Online, for example, try to access my site collection, when it prompts me for my username and password, I'm going to enter the username and password I have for the cloud. And for Outlook, for example, I'm going to enter that password again, that username and password I have for the cloud. As soon as we step into the bottom two, where we have single sign-on, now we're getting into a space where it's not always the case that you have to sign in again. So if you've configured single sign-on, you've set up ADFS or SHIB or any other third-party STS, and your user's sitting at home, and they're going to try to access SharePoint Online, and you'll see this flow in a second, but at a high level, they're going to get prompted because we don't know enough about your sign-in at that point. You'll have to provide your username and password, much like you did on the top row. Except again, this is the AD credentials you're passing in, right? You're authenticating against ADFS. That's true across all three experiences. I'm sorry. On the bottom, when your domain joins, so your user is sitting at work, at their desk, when they try to hit SharePoint Online or use Link, it'll silently authenticate them. They don't have to type in their credential again. So this just kind of calls out, even with single sign-on, there are some scenarios where you're going to have to type your username and password. It's about which username and password and where you're signing in that's different. We'll be getting to sort of a slide that talks about the other STSs we support. So as a precursor to that, what we need to sort of put out there is rich clients require WSStar support. That's a SAML 1.1 token. And there this actually is supported by, well, obviously ADFS, as well as some of our partners, Ping, Optimal. The TechNet link here goes to a detailed list of all the third-party STSs we currently support. There are some scenarios, like I mentioned earlier, that don't quite work with every provider, and those caveats are called out in that documentation. So that's something just to go and make sure you read through if you're evaluating a third-party STS. We do support SAML 2.0, and so that's SHIB with the enhanced client and proxy profile. The drawback there, for the most part, is that we don't have the ability to support rich clients. Again, Link is a good example. I'm Link on the desktop. You can't actually use Link with single sign-on if SHIB is your provider. Another one there is Office Pro Plus. So this is when you get Office Pro via download as a service subscription instead of buying the DVD. This is because both of those experiences use the sign-in assistant, a piece of technology that can't quite yet interface with Shibboleth and its APIs. So I think there's conversations on the go. I'm actually not entirely sure the timeline on that. Oh, there's a question.
You mentioned it's not able to communicate with Shibboleth's APIs, but is not the case that Windows simply does not support SAML 2.0 yet?
Sorry, so the question was, I said that it doesn't know, the SHIB interfaces don't support the interaction here required by Sign-in Assistant. And you were saying, isn't it that Windows doesn't support
SAML 2.0? So when you want to develop an application in .NET, and Windows application use that as .NET, but you cannot use SAML 2.0 yet. So .NET developers cannot build something which supports...
Oh, I see. So you're getting at what the root cause of actually not having SAML 2.0 support is, and you're saying Windows itself, the Windows stack in .NET, does not support, as opposed to just something in the sign-in assistant. That's possible. I'd need to double-check for you, sorry. And there are other SAML providers coming, though, and again, obviously subject to the same limitations. A couple details about the tokens that we generate. First of all, there's three key items, and there's slight variations here in terms of the naming, but at a high level, we need to include what's called the issuer URI. This helps us to understand where this came from. That's a lookup procedure that we'll do as part of authentication. Second is, we need to know who you are, so the user source address or immutable ID. This is that unique identifier that actually DirSync populates as well. If you can imagine, DirSync creates the users in the cloud, and ADFS or your single sign-on solution will authenticate them. So clearly, we need to have a full circle in there. So that's why we use a source anchor value that's created and populated by DirSync for that. And finally, we need the user principal name. This is the sign-in name that the user provides when they log in. Key thing here is you must actually use the user principal name in Active Directory for all the scenarios to work. Some customers have asked, well, I can configure ADFS to generate the UPN based on email address or some arbitrary other attribute. Again, the sign-in assistant here is hard-coded to look at the user principal name value within Active Directory, so that's why certain scenarios won't work if you plumb your ADFS or STS to use something other than the user principal name. This is the pretty picture of the world that we live in today. Basically, what we're trying to illustrate here is you have your on-premises environment on the left-hand side. You've deployed your internal ADFS servers as well as ADFS proxies to enable external access. The ADFS servers have three endpoints that are used by the variety of clients that we have. The first one is the MEX endpoint, the metadata exchange. That provides information so clients like Link can find out endpoints and other information it needs to do its authentication. Then there's a web endpoint. This is the endpoint that's used for passive profiles. So when you sign into OAuth, for example, it's going to interact with the web endpoint on your ADFS proxies, or if you're internal, with your ADFS server on-prem. And finally, there's the active endpoint. The active endpoint is used almost exclusively by Exchange Online. And some of the goodness in the scenarios that we can enable with ADFS and Exchange are heavily dependent on that. And speaking about goodness enabled, client access filtering. So I referred to this earlier, where this is the ability to say, if this user came from this IP address, deny them access. So if they're outside the corporate network, don't let them in. That's an example of client access filtering. It's really about enabling the blocking of external access. There's a couple caveats around how you can generate those rules and what ends up getting blocked or allowed. And so it's primarily focused on exchange scenarios, though. There isn't the ability to limit Link online or other things like Office Pro Plus. So this diagram here is just going to walk you through real quick the different ways in which the ADFS infrastructure you'll set up, or loosely speaking, any SSO provider, interacts with Office 365 and Windows Azure Active Directory. On the left-hand side, you've got your user on a client machine. When they try to access, let's say, SharePoint Online, I want to get to my site collection, they'll go up to the SharePoint Online server and say, please let me in. SharePoint Online will look at the session and realize, I can't find any information about you that I know and trust, so please go log in. That'll issue a 302 redirection up to our authentication platform. The authentication platform is going to say, I can't find any information in your session that I know and trust, you got to go log in. At this point, we'll redirect you over to your ADFS server, because we know that you are a federated user. You go to ADFS, and you type in your username and password. At that point, ADFS issues a SAML token, a token containing information about you. One clarification I'll just make here, because the question came up earlier today, you can hydrate additional claims into the SAML token via ADFS. There was a line item in TechEd that was, and I understand it is relatively confusing, where it says SharePoint doesn't support claims-based authentication. The clarification I'll make there is SharePoint, and that's why I use this as the example, can't consume the additional claims that you've added to the SAML token at ADFS. We drop those in transit. So I don't know if the gentleman is in the room that asked that question earlier today, but that was a great point where the wording was confusing. SharePoint itself is still claims aware. It can't consume additional claims that were hydrated as part of the ADFS authentication experience. So you go back to our authentication platform with the SAML token from ADFS. We can read that. You've pre-configured SSO, and now we can issue our own token. We know who you are, and we're going to present our RPS token there. And we will ultimately send you back to SharePoint Online. SharePoint Online can now read that, understand it, and then make a decision to whether to let you in or not. Next is the rich client, so using Link as the example here. So you've signed into Windows with domain/username and then your password. When you try to log in with Link, it's going to go first to the authentication platform and say, hey, can I let John O in? Well, the authentication platform says, I don't have anything meaningful in this session. I don't know who you are. Please go sign in. Again, single sign-on is being pre-configured, so you'll bounce to ADFS. Now, because you previously signed in, ADFS can issue you that SAML token right away without you seeing that username and password prompt. This is one of the examples of where single sign-on is a better user experience than what you see with password sync. You get the SAML token, comes back to your client. We redirect you up to our authentication platform. We can read that. You are someone we recognize. We issue our token instead, and then Link is able to take that and get over to Link Online and allow you to log in and communicate with others. Finally, Exchange Proxy Auth. This is just a little bit different than the previous one. In this case, you're on the corporate network. You've signed into Windows. Now I want to open my Outlook. I want to access my mailbox. So open Outlook. The client's going to go to Exchange and say, Jono's mailbox is in Exchange Online. Exchange Online goes, nah, I don't know who Jono is. Have him sign in. So it prompts you. There's a username and password dialog box that says, please give us your username and password. I put in my username and password. This then goes up to Exchange Online. Exchange Online, in turn, says, OK, well, this is Outlook, so I'm going to do this on your behalf. I'm going to go to your ADFS, because I know you're a single sign-on. Goes to the authentication platform. Authentication platform says, no, Jono's a federated user. So then it sends you out to ADFS. ADFS says, OK, I do recognize this. This is that active endpoint that was in the diagram before. I do know who this is. This is someone we should let in. And it issues a SAML token. So basically, the main difference here is Exchange went to your ADFS on your behalf instead of you going directly via your client. ADFS issues that SAML token, sends you back to Exchange Online. Exchange Online says, OK, authentication platform, now do you know who this is? Authentication platform says, yep, this is Jono. Issue that the RPS token, go back to Exchange, and now Exchange can say, I got it. This is Jono, and let him access his mailbox. So as you can see, there's a little bit of difference there between how Outlook works and why the credential prompt is there compared to sort of Link and your other clients. Now, I mentioned earlier, ADFS or single sign-on provides you the ability to configure some richer multi-factor authentication mechanisms. One of the ways you can do this is actually by providing sort of a custom HTTP module and plumbing that into ADFS. However, this is only for web applications, so what we sometimes think of as passive profile from the cloud. what you can do is do things like smart card access or the RSA tokens, and put that in as part of the authentication platform authentication flow. So for the smart card scenario, you can imagine here you are. You're the user. You want to access SharePoint Online. And again, this is passive. SharePoint Online does redirections as opposed to actively authenticates you with ADFS on your behalf. When you access SharePoint Online, just like with the previous workflow, it doesn't know who you are yet. So it sends you over to the authentication platform. Authentication platform doesn't have any information about you yet. So it says, OK, we need to know a little bit more about you. Who are you? You give your username, jluck@contoso.com. Goes, ah, OK, you're actually federated. So go over there to sign up or sign in with ADFS. Now, with ADFS, what you've actually done is you've already pre-enabled require smart card for login. So from the Windows Azure Active Directory standpoint, we didn't know or have to care that ADFS was configured for smart card access. So when you provided your smart card information and credentials, ADFS proxy in turn went to Active Directory in your on-premises environment, did your authentication, everything looked good, and then we allow access. Then ADFS says you're good. At that point, the SAML token comes back. You provide that to the authentication platform. Authentication platform says, yep, I know and trust this token. This is Jono. And you're sent back to SharePoint Online. You're in. A slightly more flexible approach is when you use HTTP modules and plug that into your ADFS proxy. So in this case, what we'll do is relatively similar, but the flow is a little bit different on the left-hand side. Again, you're going to try to access SharePoint Online. Nothing in your session about your login yet. SharePoint sends you to the authentication platform. Still don't know who you are. So you type in your username. We realize you're federated. Send you over to your ADFS proxy. The key thing here now is the ADFS proxy knows I've been configured with some custom 2FA provider. Windows Azure Active Directory does not know anything about this, does not need to know. The 2FA challenge and response happens wholly within your environment at this point. You as a user provide your second factor of authentication or whatever else is required. The 2FA provider validates that. Things look good. And sends you as the user back to your ADFS proxy. The little flow, okay, everything looks good. This is Jono, he is as he said. Then redirects you up into Windows Azure Active Directory. That whole 2FA dance has happened outside of our knowledge. All we know is that we successfully got back the SAML token. That's why you have full pluggability with this solution. Put anything in there. As long as we get that SAML token at the end, we're able to consume that. Once we're able to consume that, we send you back to SharePoint Online. Caveat, you aren't able to support rich client apps with this particular model. It's just the way in which the redirections happen and what interactions can happen. Another way to implement sort of multi-factor authentication is to require a VPN session into your corporate network. And at a really high level, what you can imagine is, just like we said before, you can go and configure which IP addresses are allowed to access or authenticate with ADFS, right? That's actually a rule. And you can issue deny rules if you're outside that range. By requiring a VPN, what you'll effectively do is allow internal IP addresses only. And because this user's pre-VPNed in, and that VPN requires a second factor of authentication, smart card or something else, we can trust, or ADFS can trust, that that user was allowed to come in and then issue its SAML token, which then gets passed back to the cloud, and they're able to access their services. That's pretty much it for content. There's a couple links up here I wanted to put, just based on a lot of the questions we've been getting. How to set up DirSync and ADFS. There's TechNet documentation on what you need, the prerequisites. How to set up password synchronization. I promise it's just a checkbox, but there's more information in there. As we get questions about password synchronization, can I use password sync with ADFS? Can I do this, do that? We're building an FAQ for frequently asked questions. So please check back there, comment on that, and we'll make sure we try to get to those as best as possible. And as I promised, there's an article on which non-ADFS SSO providers are supported with Azure Active Directory and Office 365. And so we actually have a little bit of time left for questions, if anyone has any. Or if you ask them this morning, then we're good to go. All right, well, thank you very much for your time. If you do have questions, come by the booth later.